Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 48 and a half. It is bonus edition from London, Doubletree by Hilton, Docklands Riverside, the host hotel where we've been all week. It is 4:30 in the morning here in London time. The after party is kind of wrapping up. The bar is closed down. There is late night pizza being delivered all around us.
Yes.
There are stars of the UFC. But we got the biggest star in the room to sit down at the table. John Anik is here with me. You were in the building tonight. Let's just get right to it. The main event, Michael Bisping gets it done over Anderson Silva. I predicted it going in. That was my pick.
Yeah.
I picked Michael Bisping, but I'm not going to lie. As we got closer to this thing, I thought, man, I made such an emotional decision. What the hell am I thinking?
You know, as I got to London for Fight Week, I had a lot of those same feelings. I saw Anderson Silva. I saw the size discrepancy, which I didn't think was as pronounced, and just saw the demeanor of Anderson Silva, just a picture of composure and relaxation and having so much fun. And he almost had this aura as if to say, Michael Bisping's got very little for me. And
yep.
But no, on my podcast with Kenflo, we both picked Bisping by decision. And, you know, I said, or I tweeted after Dominic Cruz beat TJ Dillashaw, it was the most inspired I had ever been by a singular UFC performance. And Michael Bisping topped that tonight. You know, it's just a warrior spirit and a level of mental and physical toughness that I just can't relate to and never had as a basketball player or as an athlete myself. And, you know, going into that fourth round, I think there's some criticism to be levied at Anderson Silva because even though some people scored that fourth round for him, I didn't, but some people did, and that's okay if they did. But when you have Michael Bisping, all sorts of messed up, potentially concussed, bleeding out of every hole on his face, you got to win that fourth round.
Yep.
I mean, your output has to win that fourth round. And by not winning that fourth round, it cost him the fight. All praise to Michael Bisping.
That was the key moment of the fight, of course. The end of round three, the start of round four, all that. That was the key moment. And it was funny because I'm with Herb Dean. I understand. You know, it seems like he was right on top of it. It was a little bit controversial, but just when things happen right at the bell, it's confusing sometimes. But Herb never made he never waved it off. I mean, he was very clear. You could hear the audio. I'm sure you could hear it better than we did. But I watched some replays, and he was saying right away, "It's not over. It's not over.
Right.
It's not over." Trying to communicate the best he could. A lot of things happened there, but I thought, honestly, I kind of thought it was all for naught. I'm like, well, Bisping's
right.
Obviously hurt. I mean,
yeah.
Great, he survived. He's about to get mauled when he goes out here to start this fourth round. And Anderson Silva let him off the hook. And, I don't mean to be rude, but I can't see it any other way.
Yeah.
I feel like Anderson Silva had that fight anytime he wanted it. And I don't want to take anything away from Michael Bisping
right.
because I think Michael Bisping deserves a hell of a lot of praise for staying disciplined,
yeah.
not getting into the game. You saw a couple times when Anderson would start the annex, he would just stop and back away and reset, like,
yeah.
I'm not playing the game. But I feel like, especially the start of that fourth round, as you said, you got to win that fourth round. And I thought Mike was still a little bit out of it, and I thought
for sure
that Anderson could have gotten it done right away.
You know, I thought Michael was still a little bit out of it in the fifth round, which Anderson Silva, I thought, certainly won. But, no, I think you set it up beautifully, and I think for Michael Bisping, you know, a good start was key, and a lot of people thought a good start meant just avoiding the finish. And to
right.
me, it was banking rounds, and he banked one and two, got the knockdown in round two. You know, ultimately, with his ground and pound and his overall physical strength, this isn't Chris Weidman. So you saw him go in for the kill, and
right.
he has a gas tank that he's not afraid to punch himself out, right? He knows he can go five hard fives. He didn't have the strength or finishing ability of a Chris Weidman to get Anderson Silva out of there at that point in the fight. But, God, just an incredible individual effort by Anderson Silva, or excuse me, by Michael Bisping. And I think you're right, Anderson Silva did let him off the hook. You know, Anderson sometimes gives off a vibe of someone who is, you know, less intelligent than he is. And I have to admit that in the moment, one of my first thoughts was he knows that Herb Dean said the fight's not over. He knows that there was a horn, but he's going to see if he can't try to parlay this into a finish.
Sell it, right?
And I can't believe that I would have been the only one who had that thought. You know, I think Anderson Silva can give off this vibe of ignorance in that moment, you know, and eventually I don't know who went over to him. The credentialed guy was like, I implore you to get off the cage, sir, you know. I think Michael Bisping really deserves to be celebrated because even here in London, England, you know, this is not a guy who has 100% of this crowd,
right.
you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You know, a guy like Ricky Hatton fights here. I mean, you might have 10 people in the building rooting for the other guy.
Right.
Not the case with Michael Bisping. I mean, certainly it was a Bisping crowd, but there were Silva chants raining down at
yep.
some point, if you can believe that. And I just would say, and I have said this to fans here all night, you know, this should be a night where I hope 95% of England, if not more, is celebrating Michael Bisping, as opposed to maybe the 60% that support him, you know, blindly.
It felt like it at the end. Yeah. I mean, once it was done and the storybook ending was complete and the name was read out, man, it did feel like they were supporting. Let me ask you quickly about the flying knee in the third round. I have heard some people say Anderson shouldn't have thrown that knee. It was very clear that Michael Bisping didn't have his mouthpiece, was trying to get the attention, that maybe Herb Dean was kind of silent. But personally, I felt nothing wrong. Defend yourself at all times.
Absolutely.
I thought Michael Bisping just made a horrific decision there. And, boy, you know, because I thought the fight was over right away, and I thought, oh, my God, this is the moment that is going to live with Michael Bisping the rest of his life. He's fighting the perfect fight for 14 minutes and 50 seconds, and then he just does something – ridiculous and gets caught. So sounds like you're in the same boat. No problem with Anderson throwing the knee.
No, and you know, a little bit maybe a comparison can be drawn with Floyd Mayweather. I think it was against Victor Ortiz.
Right,
I mean, you gotta, you know, defend yourself at all times. So no problem with Anderson Silva. I didn't even know until Dana White mentioned it on our post-fight show or post-fight bit that we did with Dan Hardy that the mouthpiece was the reason why Michael Bisping ultimately was trying to get the attention of Herb Dean, because in the moment, sitting octagon side, I didn't know that that was the issue. But you're right. 14 minutes and 50 seconds, largely, it was Michael Bisping's. And some people suggesting maybe a 10-8 for Anderson Silva in the third. I just don't think on the strength of one seminal strike like that, it's enough for a 10-8. So.
I agree. Here's the weird thing, too. Okay, we knew this was kind of a crossroads fight for both guys. You know, if Michael Bisping loses his fight, A, he's never getting a title shot. It's just not going to happen. He's too late in his career. B, had Anderson Silva come out and look terrible, we start saying, this is the 40-year-old Anderson Silva. This is the, you know, I hate the whole PED thing where he tested positive once and now we have to look at his whole career and wonder. But it's human nature. But the whole thing is, I think Anderson Silva came. I want to see Anderson fight again.
I know.
I thought he looked great.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you are a guy who has done what he's done, because it's hard to sort of get back that form at an advanced age. And, you know, obviously you have the PED backdrop. But you're right. To me, though, he strikes me right now as a fighter who doesn't really care so much about wins and losses or scoring points to try to win rounds. I mean, there was his corner men, you know, their inner monologues have to be like, bro, what the fuck, man? You know?
What are you doing?
Like, you know, because, but I just think for Anderson, you know, he's trying to get you out of there. And that's why I thought the lack of a killer instinct in the fourth round and the lack of output at times, you know, I was getting into the showboating a little bit. I thought the speed was back. I thought his head movement looked terrific, evading a lot of those early kicks from Michael Bisping. But gosh, I thought there was just too much of that and not enough offense. And to your point, in a fight in which there were openings and he clearly had a massive power advantage, and it just, there was sort of an, you know, an insouciance and just sort of a carelessness and just, I mean, I he's carefree and tonight just didn't care enough to bank rounds and really pay for it.
Just to touch on that, I was looking at the Fight Metric report. The early stats, I think they go back and revise them a little bit sometimes. They watch them again. But the early stats show that Michael Bisping threw 320 total strikes to just 135 for Anderson Silva. And granted, Anderson Silva's percentage was higher. When he landed, he hurt. And Anderson Silva got wobbled a little bit too. But, I mean, when Anderson landed, it was like that. Watching that fifth round, Michael Bisping's in survival mode, and I'm just like, oh, can he make it to the final bell?
I'm just looking at that clock, and every second seems like two, you know, and it's 3 minutes left on the clock, and you just are thinking, how is this guy going to possibly survive? Yeah. And I even thought that way. I was like, he's got 10 minutes here, rounds four and five, and if I could pick any guy on the roster to try to survive this crazy, inhumane situation, it's probably Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
So I felt somewhat good in that regard, but God, no. I mean, and even fans next to me, you know, 2.5 minutes ago, dude, half a round? Like, how's he going to survive? And raise my hand. Well, the answer is if Anderson Silva doesn't, you know.
Shut it down. He just shut it down. Even in the final, I mean, the guy's, to me, he's still the greatest of all time. I still honestly believe that.
Yeah.
But just bizarre decision-making in there. At the end of the fifth round, I mean, Michael's on fumes. I mean, he's got the cardio, but his body's just starting to give out on it, man, from the damage that he's taking. And I thought Anderson could close it out. And he just, he literally just kind of dancing a little bit.
Yeah.
It was bizarre.
I want to say one more thing about that fourth round, because there were so many things that impressed me tonight about Michael Bisping. And, you know, obviously I work with this guy and have developed a relationship with him and, you know, have met his son Callum and the family backdrop. So it's just a special night, you know, on so many different levels. But the fourth round, what impressed me the most of anything Bisping did in the fight was the offensive output in round four.
Yep.
Not necessarily effective or super accurate, but the point was that in order to stem the tide, you know, we're critical of Anderson Silva in round four, but part of the reason he never got off was because there was a lot of offense coming back. And here's Michael Bisping after potentially being concussed. I mean, just blood everywhere, and yet he's dictating pace and trying to be the aggressor and control the octagon. And even if it wasn't effective striking, just incredible that he would have the wherewithal, you know, half in the bag to be the offensive guy.
It's incredible. I happened to look up right before that round started, and Michael Bisping basically just spit out mouthful of blood.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, all right, let's go. You know?
He must have spit, you know, massive amounts of blood out, you know, seven or eight times, blown it out of his nose. And then, of course, he's fighting with one eye right now to begin with.
Right.
Now he's got blood in the other eye, and so that eye's compromised. I mean, just warrior. I mean, just not human.
I felt like I was watching a movie tonight. I really did.
Yeah.
It was one of those weird ones where it just the way, I mean, the ebb and the flow and the way it all played out. And knowing what this meant to Michael Bisping, knowing what a huge moment this was in his life, how much this victory, just the fight itself meant to him, I felt like I was watching a movie. You said it. You've worked with Michael Bisping. I know it's hard not to develop personal relationships with those guys. But what do you want to see moving forward for him? I've heard some people, you know, I know he wants that title shot. Man, the top of that 185 division is stacked right now, man. There's some beasts up there. But, you know, you wonder, is it one of those situations where it's like, hey, this guy's been a company man for so damn long. I almost think about, like, you know, when Nate Quarry got a title shot. You know, was he necessarily the number one contender? Or was it just like, hey, here's a guy, he's, you know, we like him. He doesn't have much longer left. Let's give him that shot just to go out. Would you be in favor of that? Or do you think if there's just – I mean, obviously we know we got the rematch first. We've got Rockhold and Weidman first. Do you feel like Bisping's done enough, especially over the course of his whole career, that you could give him that? Or do you feel like, man, with Jacare there, with, you know, looks like Yoel Romero's going to be on the sidelines for a little while, with Tim Kennedy, I'm hearing that name thrown out there. I mean, what do you do with Bisping next?
Well, absolutely, Michael Bisping has done enough to earn a middleweight title shot. And, you know, I'm going to sound like his friend and not an analyst here, but how do you not respect the hell out of the guy who, when asked about the title shot, that he is finally as close as he's ever been to earning, and he says, you know, when you look like this with your face mangled, you know, maybe you don't necessarily lay claim to a title shot. Yet, here he is, 18th UFC wins. You know, his signature win coming in tonight, you know, a lot of us were talking about it. Was it Dennis Kang or was it Brian Stann or maybe Alan Belcher, who had some momentum when they fought? And now, of course, that signature win is Anderson Silva. So I don't care how you get it. You know, I asked Dan Hardy on our post-fight show. I was like, dude, you know, I understand the Vitor fight maybe makes some sense. But, gosh, I mean, this elusive is the buzzword when it comes to the title shot for Michael Bisping. And now you have a win over the consensus greatest of all time. You shut it down. Go spend time with your kids. And I would not, if I'm Michael Bisping, you know, I really try to push that envelope. I know he has been somebody who Dana White has long respected, and now that respect just went through the damn roof. So I really hope to see, you know, something definitive, I guess, in the Rockhold-Weidman series, and then Michael Bisping being next.
That'd be fantastic. I think he's a guy that, you could make the argument that he's not the number one contender deservedly, you know, but just as you said, with everything he's done, the guy, every fight that he's in, it's interesting. Well, you know, even if it doesn't start out that way, I mean, the show that he put on at the weigh-ins yesterday, I mean, it's just every fight that he's in is fun, exciting. He's been a company guy. He's always done the right things, and I'd kind of like to see it happen too. You know, I don't know if I favor him against Luke Rockhold or Chris Weidman. I mean, that's a tough fight for him.
And that's the other angle to this, because the Rockhold fight to me, I mean, Rockhold's the best 185-pound fighter I think that I've seen, you know, at his best, you know, in his prime, at his best on one night. I think he's better than Anderson Silva, and so does Brian Stann, so don't give me too much shit for that. but, yeah, I just, I don't know, man. I think the time is now for Michael Bisping. I just, the Rockhold matchup really, on so many levels, I just think couldn't be worse for him. So, you know, realizing a UFC title shot and actually winning it is one thing. But, hey, you know, if this ends up being the second biggest fight of his career, look what he just did tonight.
Not bad. It's a moment they'll never be able to take away from him. And the fact that it happened here in London was amazing. Well, listen, I know you got to go catch a plane soon, so I don't want to keep you too long. Obviously, we got to plug the wildly successful and creatively named John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Oh, you too. I know. Hey, we're open to suggestions. Hustle and flow is not going to be it because, you know, I'm not going to call myself hustle. I mean, that's cocky, right? So I know Kenny's flow, so we are open to all suggestions, of course. But at least for now, you know, people search Kenny Florian on iTunes and the podcast pops up.
You
so
got
it's
big
working
names like
us,
John
Hennigan,
you know? Kenny Florian. You got to use those names, man.
Oh,
that's
man.
Star power.
Well,
right
MMA
there.
Roadshow was taken like 2 weeks before we launched, so what are you going
to
do?
What are you going to do? All right, my man. Well, always good to talk to you. Safe travels back home. When are you on the mic again?
Not till Brisbane, Australia. So we'll be having a little house party for UFC 196 at home with the family. And the prediction is Conor by first round knockout. And not going out on a limb there. But just excited to have a couple weeks with the kids. And off to Brisbane for Hunt and Mir.
Awesome. Well, myself and Cold Coffee will be down there as well. So maybe we can do something down under.
Cold Coffee. Get that man a microphone, right?
Yes, sir. We're going to throw him on here in just a second. In the meantime, we're going to refill up on some frosty beverages. And we're going to hear from the man himself, the Count, Michael Bisping. Hear him share his thoughts about his wonderful night at the evening's post-event press conference. Mike, we'll let you get settled, but obviously congratulations on the win. You've had a few minutes to soak it in. We know how much this fight has meant to you over the years and did mean to you. Give us your thoughts right now, how you're feeling.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. You know, this is a feeling very good. This is a fight that I've wanted for a long time, obviously. And, you know, going into the fight, of course, there was things that were said. But I have the utmost respect for Anderson Silva. This is the greatest fighter of all time. The things that he did. So for me, this was a personal challenge. It really was. This is by far the biggest win of my career. I thought I won the majority of the rounds. Of course, he had a big moment in round three. I dropped my mouthpiece. Herb Dean, he gets called the best referee in the business. I don't know, man. I know there needs to be a break in the action to stop and pick up the mouthpiece. There was no action. I was trying to say, Herb, that's my fault. I'm too experienced to make those mistakes. And Anderson capitalized, and well done to that guy for that. But all in all, you know, of course, you don't like to be sat here covered in stitches. But I got the win.
Can you talk about that your recovery at that moment? Because it did seem like, you know, a lot of people thought the fight was over. Did you think initially the fight was over? And then when you realized it wasn't, it did seem initially like your body language wasn't sure if you wanted to get back in there or not.
Oh, no, come on. I, of course, wanted to get back in there. Whilst I have a breath in my body, I will always continue trying to fight. I felt fine, and then when the round stopped, I wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't sure what had happened. I was like, no, please don't tell me this is over. I'm fine. Of course, you know, when you've just taken a couple of knees and elbows, etc., your faculties aren't exactly the sharpest at that moment in time. But fortunately, it wasn't the end, and I got the job done, as I say. I mean, for me, this is the stuff that childhood dreams is made of. You know, fighting in the nation's capital at the O2 Arena, sold out against Anderson Silva. It doesn't get any better than that. And the fight was a war. It was a back and forth battle. I think the crowd enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I won. So, of course, it lived up to my expectations. Did it live up to yours?
I hadn't been waiting for it as long as you had, but it was an extremely exciting fight of a night, obviously. So you did it a lot right.
There you go.
Mike, this week, when we spoke, I asked you if you believed in fate and destiny, and you said that for a long time you haven't, but things have happened in your personal life that have made you kind of think differently.
Sure.
Do you think it was fate and destiny that after campaigning for so many years to fight Anderson Silva, that you finally beat him, and it was in your home ground here in London, in England?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes back to the question which I just answered. You know, I mean, as I said, certain things have happened in my personal life, which kind of has me feeling like that. You know, I'm not really a deep person. I'm not a spiritual person. But, yeah, I don't know. Certain things have happened recently to make me possibly question that. But, yeah, listen, as I said, this is, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. For a guy like me that took up mixed martial arts, you know, to apply himself and then to be here fighting in front of all you fine people in the greatest city in the world, you know, at the O2 Arena against Anderson Silva. Yes, okay, there was no title on the line, but it was still an epic event for me and something I will always remember. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank all the British public and everybody that came out and supported this event. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart.
There's probably a lot of UK fighters, both in and outside of the UFC, that have probably been inspired by your performance tonight. Have you got a message for them?
Wow. You know, I mean, I never look at myself as an inspirational figure. I really don't. I'm just a guy just on a mission trying to take care of my family. I've got to say, I was super impressed with everybody tonight. You know, there's a lot of great British fighters coming up. I think the UK MMA scene is the strongest it's ever been. I mean, if you look at the card tonight, it was stacked top to bottom with English fighters, with British fighters, with European fighters, you know, and everybody did a fantastic job, and I'm proud of them all. I'm proud of this sport. I'm proud to be, okay, yeah, headlining, I guess. Yes, it makes me very proud, but I'm proud of this sport and where it's come to after all this time. You know, 10 years ago, half of you people probably didn't even know what UFC stood for. You know, but you're all here and you all enjoyed the show. And this is just the start, believe you me.
And just final question. Would you go as far as to say this is the greatest moment in your life?
Not the greatest moment in my life. Certainly the greatest moment in my mixed martial arts career, yes. You know, I mean, it's Anderson Silva. It's Anderson Silva. I just beat him in my home, my nation's capital. What more do you want? Of course. Thank you.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Michael Bisping on his glorious night, what he said is the best moment of his mixed martial arts career. You really can't argue with that. Now bring in European colleague Shamatkar Sandhu. Man, Sandhu, let's talk about it. Just an amazing fight from start to finish. It was one of those ones that's a little bit of everything. Some ebb and some flow, some controversy. Mm-hmm. Just give me your immediate thoughts on it.
I think you described it the best way. It was like a movie. It had everything. You know, it's like Bisping started off really well. You had a controversial moment in the third round with the flying knee kind of knockout, basically.
Right.
Herb Dean being a bit, you know, is he not going to help him get the mouth guard? The buzzer goes off, it's pandemonium, Silva's celebrating, the fans don't know what's going on, and then people rush in and say, hey, the fight's not over. Herb Dean's like, hey, get back to your corner, the fight isn't over yet. And then Bisping is hanging on for dear life in the fourth and fifth round. It's just crazy. And then he gets the decision, he gets the win, and the pace goes through the roof, and it's unbelievable. This guy, Michael Bisping, who's been the poster boy, and he said that he's not really comfortable with it, but let's face it,
he is
the poster boy for UK MMA. He's been the Brit, has been flying the flag both inside the octagon, outside the octagon. He's been the company man for the UFC for so long. He's main evented cards in all over the world, but specifically here in the UK. Sold them out again tonight in the O2 Arena in London. There's a record-breaking gate, record-breaking ticket sales. Again, he's headlining the card. And in that time, no one's come even to be close to being a pretender to the throne of being the guy to represent this country on the biggest stage that MMA has to give. And here he is, 36, almost 37. He's been asking for this fight for so, so damn long. He wanted it when Anderson Silva was champion. Didn't get it then, but he was honest enough to say earlier this week that had he maybe fought Silva 5-6 years ago when Silva was at his peak, maybe Bisping didn't have what he...
Gotta respect the hell out of him for admitting that.
He's been so open and so honest, wearing his heart on his sleeve all week long during his media obligations. But he said that he still wanted to have this fight. It meant the world to him. It means the world to his family, his friends. It means so much to his legacy. And the fact that he was in tears, he was crying, he dropped to his knees, you know, to celebrate that victory after it was announced that he had got the judge's decision. It's really unbelievable, and obviously I'm trying to be as completely unbiased as I possibly can. You know, I'm a Brit. I'm from London. You know, and again, I did kind of you know pretty harshly predict in the build up of this fight that a 50% Anderson Silva would be 110% Michael Bisping. Well, I think we got the best version of Michael Bisping that there's ever been in the octagon. Did we get a 50% Anderson Silva? No, we got a pretty decent Anderson Silva. He wasn't bad at all. He just was trigger shy. He could have gone further. He there were moments where he could have finished the fight, but he didn't, and that's his fault. That's not Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping did exactly what he could do. He had all the heart and the guts and determination to get the win and get the victory, and what a moment. And you know hearing John Anik say that this fight, and of course he's got a close personal relationship, but you know the win that Bisping has got over Silva was more inspirational than, you know, Cruz over Dillashaw. That's an amazing, amazing statement, and I can't believe it. It's a great time if you're a UK MMA fan. It's a great time if you're a Brit. I'm sure that the ticket ticket holders tonight went home really, really happy.
Absolutely.
Especially the Brits. And we're hearing that, you know, the Fight Pass numbers are actually continuing to increase post-event, because all anyone's talking about is that third round, the decision, the judges' scorecards,
right.
Which way did you score it? And people are talking online right now. The MMA community is all talking about this fight. And for those that didn't watch the fight are now actually making a Fight Pass subscription to watch the fight.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
That is crazy. Well, I didn't want to put John Anik on the spot because, you know, obviously he works for the UFC. He's got to be a little bit careful, but I will put you on the spot. How did you score the fight?
1-2-4 Bisping.
1-2-4 Bisping. That's exactly the way I scored it as well. I think, you know, if there is any controversy about it, it's the fourth round. That seems to be the swing round. I think
sure.
Everybody else feels very comfortable with 1-2-3-5. John Anik brought up the fact that some people think there's a 10-8 in round three. I completely
no way.
Agree with him. There's no way. It was one shot.
Right.
That's not enough for a 10-8. Looking at MMADecisions.com, a fantastic website if people haven't checked it out. It's a great resource and tool for seeing. They tracked 22 total scores. They had 16 for Bisping, 1 as a draw, and 5 for Anderson Silva. So the vast majority there in the corner of Michael Bisping as well. You know, the judges all turn in the exact same scorecard, which it seems like we rarely see that, especially
right,
in key
right,
fights.
Right. You know,
if you want to say there's controversy over the Herb Dean, how he handled the whole thing, maybe so. We did try to talk to Herb Dean earlier, but in true roadshow form, he had a frosty beverage in hand. And he said, you know
and
what,
he
guys?
Politely declined.
Yeah, he politely declined and said, no, you know, guys, I hope you understand. You actually went and tracked him down.
I did,
said,
yeah.
I've got a beverage in hand, and so that's off.
It's unprofessional, and maybe tomorrow morning.
And I can respect the hell out of that. Totally understand that. We might be able to catch up with him tomorrow morning. So give me your thoughts, knowing that you scored it the same way I did. I don't think there's any controversy in the result itself. I think I still feel good with it. Of course, I'll go back and watch round four again. But let's take the journalist hat off, I guess, for a second.
Sure.
And just say, as a Brit, how did it feel? Because that was a pretty damn electric atmosphere. Because it's for me, from the outside looking in as an American, you know, obviously I've been in this building for events before. I've covered, obviously, quite a few UFC events.
Sure.
But what I got all week long was everybody wanted Michael Bisping to win, but
right.
Everybody realized this is Anderson Silva, dude. I don't know if this is going to happen. But to me, it's like, okay, round one's in the books. Like, he won that, right?
He
did win that, right?
Right.
Round two's in the books. He won that too, right? Round three. Wait. He still gets to keep going. And then round four comes out, and then you just feel this kind of, oh, my God, is he going to be able to do this? And then he gets it done. Round five. Insane. We'll talk about that in just a second. But just when the decision is read, 48-47, all three judges, Michael the Count Bisping. Yes, I know you're a journalist and you're trying to be professional, but as a proud Brit and this guy being the poster boy, what was the emotion like for you?
It was pretty incredible. I mean, like you said, I think everyone that's from the UK, whether you're a fan, a UFC employee, a journalist, you know, whatever your role is within the MMA community, specifically from this part of the world, I think the majority of people were picking Bisping with their heart,
right.
But were picking Anderson Silva with their head.
Right.
And it's incredible. I mean, it's interesting. I had a conversation with another journalist this week, and he was asking me, how big is Michael Bisping? Is he a mainstream star? And I said, well, you know what? He isn't the second biggest sports star in Sweden behind Zlatan Ibrahimovic, like Alexander Gustafsson. He's not that guy. He's not Conor McGregor in Ireland, who's doing the late night shows
right.
And all that kind of stuff, right? But Michael Bisping's the biggest star we've ever had representing MMA. And he's been around for so long, flying the flag as best as he can. And he's been a marquee. He hasn't been a guy just to make up the numbers. He's been a guy that the UFC has been able to rely on here in the UK, in Australia, in Canada, in America, in Brazil. So many different shows in so
yep.
many different parts of the world, right? And he brings it. And he's been able to... Can you imagine if we didn't have Michael Bisping in the UFC right now? Who could we have turned to over the last decade, aside from Dan Hardy, whose career is currently being cut short,
right.
That's been able to, you know, really put us on the map?
Yeah.
He comes back all the time to do seminars and public appearances and really help promote the brand in the UFC, in the UK and across Europe. It felt great. And the thing is, to see him just, you know, having interviewed him for so many years and see him go up the ranks and you know what? again, I think a part of why a lot of us here in the UK are so taken back by his performance and his win and his victory is how open he's been with himself. He said, I know what people think about me. I know what people think about my legacy. I know what people talk, say and talk about me in regards to my ability. He had so much to prove, not just to himself, but to his critics. And he did it. And it was a big F you to everyone who didn't think that he could get it done on the biggest stage, on the biggest night of his life against his most formidable opponent.
Yeah.
And he got it done.
You know what's funny is, you know, things change over time and perspective changes. I mean, we're just a couple hours removed from this
sure.
event. You know, I do think that maybe over time people will look back and they'll say, well, you know, that was Anderson Silva at the end of his career. You know, when they're having that argument, you know, is, you know, where does he belong? How does he – got to be a UFC Hall of Famer, right? When he hangs it up, he's a Hall of Famer.
100%.
So I think people will probably look back and say, well, it was a depleted Anderson Silva. But I'm telling you, I feel like the guy I watched in there tonight was not a depleted Anderson Silva. I thought that he was a dangerous Anderson Silva.
He was a better Anderson Silva than Nick Diaz.
Yep.
Right?
I agree.
Right?
100%.
And I think one of the things I was kind of still giving Silva the benefit of the doubt for is, okay, he came back from that broken leg situation to fight Nick Diaz, but it was a quick turnaround. It was like less than a year.
Yep.
You know, maybe he wasn't fully all there mentally, but maybe he wasn't comfortable in his own skin and his own body, right? And fine, there's that PED, you know, cloud laying over the last year of his life, but he's had another year to kind of help get his body and his mind right to be able to perform at his absolute best. And listen, he was throwing some serious shots, and he was kind of like, you know, showing us shades of the old Anderson Silva with his kicks and knees.
Yep.
And wow, I mean, that was the best Anderson Silva that we've seen in a while. That it was, and Michael Bisping beat him, and that's something that you can't take away from Michael Bisping. I'm sorry, you can't do it.
I completely agree. Let's talk about real quick the rest of the card. Don't want to go through every fight, but what I want to ask you, I mean, really, Michael Bisping, Anderson Silva became the story of this entire card.
100%.
The card started out great with a couple of quick wins in the early going. Then we had a ton of decisions in a row.
Yeah.
We did have a fantastic highlight from Scott Askham. But good night for English MMA. You talked about, you know the sport and the scene here and Michael Bisping being the poster boy. But, you know, a guy like Arnold Allen looks like he may be somebody. But just kind of not really going into every fight, but just – looking at the card as a whole, what else did you take from this card as something that certainly will never be the headline of this card, but maybe something that you picked up on tonight that you thought, I want to see that guy again?
Well, I have to say, I did really enjoy Scott Askham's. Who didn't enjoy his walk-off head kick knockout?
Yeah.
So, you know, really, again, happy for him. He's been a bit up and down since he's entered the UFC, so good for him. Arnold Allen, obviously, you know, out there in TriStar. He took a short notice fight in his UFC debut. Now that he's had a full camp under TriStar, you know, got a win again, you know, in his home country. I think a lot of the guys that fought tonight, like Scott Askham, like Tom Breeze, and like Arnold Allen, were fighting for the UFC for the very first time in the UK, in England, in London, right? So some of them handled it well, some perhaps maybe a little bit not. Obviously, I'm referring to Tom Breeze here. A lot of expectations put on his shoulders from the fans, from the media, and from himself. Again, he's been quite critical of himself on social media, saying, you know what, I'm disappointed in myself. But at the end of the day, a win's a win. He'll learn from it. Maybe it was the fact that he was fighting here that, you know, got to him a little bit. But I have to say, the fight on the prelims that I was most looking forward to was Makwana Amerikani versus
right.
Mike Wilkinson.
Of course.
And I think most of the time I do lean more towards the striking and the stand-up exchanges in MMA, but today Amir Khani just made me really fall in love with the grappling exchanges that he had. He made it look easy. He mounted Mike Wilkinson numerous times with ease. He kind of actually told us, I don't know if you remember this, but we were getting the ferry across from one side of the River Thames back to the
That's
Fighters
right.
Hotel earlier on today, and he was basically letting me and Abby Saban know that, hey, I think I'm going to take him down. I'm going to wear him down. I'm going to grapple with him, I'm going to wrestle with him, and that's exactly what he did. And then having spoken to him for just a few short minutes here in the Fighters Hotel as he was celebrating with his team, he said that in a weird way he's happy he didn't get the finish because he was able to finally get a full 15 minutes with a high-level UFC fighter, and that for him is a massive takeaway, so good for him.
Yeah, no doubt. Let me ask you real quick about Brad Pickett. I'll be honest with you, I thought Francisco Rivera won that fight. I was a little surprised that he got the split decision. Happy for him because I think Brad Pickett's a great dude. I know Brad had kind of been considering retirement. You know, I never want to tell a guy they need to hang it up. That's not my position to do that.
Right.
But I do, like, there's these moments in time where you think, You know, the one I always go back to is Wanderlei Silva when he beat Brian Stann in Saitama Super Arena.
Right.
I was like, bro, hang it up right now.
Right.
Big Nog, when he won in Brazil, I'm like, bro, hang it up right now. Like, it's never going to get better than this.
Right.
And I feel bad saying this because Brad was saying, no, listen, man, I still feel good. I think I can keep competing, and I want to fight on. And if a guy wants to fight on, then God bless him, man, fight on. But I was just thinking, like, I don't think he won that fight. I don't think he got blown out. I mean,
right,
he was very competitive, and he had his moments. But I did think, man, what a hell of a way this would be to go out, pick up a UFC win here in London and say, thank you very much. It's been real, and I love you. I don't know. Was there any party that kind of was like, man, I wish that was it, or are you just happy to see the guy go on?
No, I agree. And the interesting thing about the Brad Pickett performance and that fight particularly is that Brad Pickett, after the fight, just dropped to his knees. And we're talking about it being emotional. We're talking about a big night for Bisping. It was a massive night for Brad Pickett. And to see him literally just break down in tears and cry and, you know, drop to his hands and knees in the moment when he found out that he won the fight was pretty amazing. But we spoke about it earlier in the week. You know, we were like, okay, look, if he loses, then maybe Dana White might have Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
If he wins, is he really going to give it up? It's that thing we've seen time and time again with fighters. They think they win one and they can win two more and three more and four more and five more. They still got it at this age, you know? The interesting thing about this situation is, even though we've got fighters from all over the UK representing UK here in the UFC, Brad Pickett is the only Londoner,
right?
Right? A fight at the O2 Arena in London, you know, record-breaking gate, you would think that that would be the ideal time to kind of say, you know what, I've got my win in London,
better,
in my backyard, with all my friends and family watching. Now's the perfect time to sail off into the sunset. But like I said, we've seen it time and time again. I actually do think that that would have been the best time for him to do it. I mean, but it's up to him. It's his choice.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't want to make it sound like I'm running the guy of the sport. I like Brad Pickett a lot, man. I think his fights are always fun.
Sure.
He's got a little swagger to him, man.
Yeah.
The trademark walk-in song, the trademark hat, all that good stuff, man. It's fun stuff. So, all right, well, we've got some fresh frosty beverages here in front of us. An MMA roadshow first. You know, we're always looking at creative ways to keep our frosty beverages cool in the hotel. There was no ice accessible, so this damn country of yours is so cold. We just set the beer on the balcony of the hotel room and let it chill. And I got to be honest with you, it's these cans that have just been put in front of us have been pretty chilled.
Yeah, we did dip them in water first, and then we left them on the balcony, so that might have added to the wind chill factor. But we are on the River Thames, and it's been quite choppy. The water has been quite choppy the last couple of days. So God bless, I suppose, this time of year, because if it was summertime and we had no ice, we'd been pretty screwed right now.
That's true. We'd be drinking warm, frosty beverages, but that's not what we're doing. So, all right, well, Shamakar Sandhu, you're actually heading to Las Vegas next week.
Well, isn't this something? First time in quite a while, I'm doing back-to-back UFC events.
Yeah.
I'm flying in on Thursday, so I guess I'll kind of meet up with you, and we'll get on the podcast again at some point. I'm not credentialed, and we've talked about this before. I was at a UFC 194, quote-unquote, as a fan, but I will be doing Junkie Radio on Friday morning, and I suppose I'll be just covering the event from my perspective, the fan's perspective. So I'll be there at the weigh-ins and at the event. I'm really looking forward to it. The reason I wanted to go to this event in the first place, out of my own pocket, is because initially, when the fight was lined up, it was going to be a history-making fight, right? Either one or two things were going to happen. Either McGregor was going to be the very first two-weight champion at the same time, or we were going to see McGregor take the very first loss in the UFC.
Right.
So that was the whole appeal to be there for something to happen. Either way, it would have been historic. But it's crazy how this world sometimes works. And we've got Nate Diaz now fighting him, which is, if for some strange, weird, bizarre reason, got me even more pumped. So I'm looking forward to being in Vegas. I can't wait to be there in a couple of days' time.
Should be a lot of fun. Should be a lot of fun. All right, well, Norman Park is stealing our pizza over there, and he has also politely pointed out that we don't need the pizza. So. while we go fight for our dinner, you guys take a quick break. We'll grab some frosty beverages, and we'll come back with cold coffee. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. My man Cole Coffee is finally in the house. He has been busy working, cutting video, doing all those things while we got this thing started. We are creeping past 5 o'clock in the morning, but still going strong because that's how we do. We're heading out in just a couple hours. We're jumping on an airplane. You still got to edit this thing.
I still
got to
edit
it all together.
And then shower. And then But, that, you know, it kind of makes it easy because then that gives me, you know, we got 3 hours, whatever, less than 3 hours now before we're supposed to meet in the lobby and go back. And it's like, this kind of takes part of that portion up. You know, I know for sure now I got to edit this. So that's going to maybe take an hour of time, shower, wash up a little bit, drink a couple beers, and then make it downstairs. So it's easy to stay up now that we have an excuse. But, yeah, man, we stopped in the room there for a second to grab these beers that you guys had hidden on the balcony. I looked at the bed, and it looked very, very inviting. It looked very, very inviting. And luckily, Sandu's not Abby's not getting on the phone because, you know, just to be blatantly honest and embarrassing and whatnot. So I decided to run into the restroom, and then, you know, nobody likes to go into a restroom right after another person.
Right.
I might have crop dusted a little bit, and then poor Abby went in there, and he actually had to leave, come out and comment about it, and then go back in and use it. I felt bad for him. He said he was actually tanner after the fact, and I thought it maybe cured his asthma and other issues.
I'm so glad I was not out there for that. Thank
yeah,
God
it was pretty bad.
Well, Abby's
he went blind
here.
For a second.
Abby's
he said.
Over here hanging out. But we've got Pear, our photographer, who looks like he's about to pass out.
We got the crew still hanging tough.
But
that's...
we got the crew. It looks like Norman Park is the last man standing.
But you figure it was like 1:30 before we even left the venue.
Yeah, it was late.
So it doesn't feel that late when you think that it's only been 3.5 hours since we left the venue.
You were in the back, as you normally are, back in the press room, filming all the preliminary fighting winners, getting set up for the press conference. But the interesting thing about the way you get to watch the fights is that you're not on press row, so you get to be a little bit more casual about it. And
it's on TV, just like at home, but yeah. I just do it from the venue.
But you get to do it with a lot of your colleagues as well, where you guys can kind of chit-chat and talk a little bit back and forth. Given the idea, and of course, not a lot of American media travel. This is mostly European media, predominantly English media. Mm-hmm. But give me an idea of what the attitude, the emotion, everything was like. Because as we've been saying so far, I mean, yes, this card had a lot of fights and there were some moments that were great. But this really became all about Michael Bisping and Anderson Silva. So what was the emotion in the back of the house as you guys were back there watching this fight?
Well, you know, it's funny. There were a lot of English media, obviously, there. So typically, a lot of times, you know, in most areas when it's just the media for the most part are supposed to be sort of unbiased. It's supposed to not really cheer. You're not supposed to do whatever. But you can cheer if it's a good fight. Like everybody expects, if it's a good fight, you, oh, man, that was great, blah, blah, blah. You know, you sort of talk it. But you could definitely sort of tell as that fight started and as it went on, the English media was really getting into it, was really starting to root for Michael. You know, it was pretty open, but it was hard to not get caught up in it, you know, and I found myself, unfortunately, you know, by the end of it, sort of grasping my hands, just waiting for that clock to tick down. You know, I was hoping Michael almost would take a double leg because in my head, I had it 3-2. So when it was in that fifth round, I was just saying, like, just take him down, right. Do something. But I found myself getting caught up, and it's hard not to, especially when you're in the country of one of the headliners. You know, you kind of get caught up in the motion. So it was easy, especially with the other members of the media. We're starting to cheer, and we're starting to get into it. It was a little crazy in the press room because they were like the two smallest rooms you can ever imagine, that they had all of us smashed in. And at one particular point, they had to kick us all out of one room so they could then move all the tables and chairs in so they could set it up for the press conference, and everybody had to smash into the other room. So it kind of disrupted things, you know, and luckily it was right sort of in between fights when we kind of were able to move around. But it was interesting. It was great, you know, to see, you know, the media get caught up into it, and I got caught up into it a little bit. And it's hard not to, because every time you walk to the restroom, you had to step out by the arena floor, and you just hear the noise of the crowd and everything, and it's hard not to get caught up into it.
It was intense. You know, you mentioned that as members of the media, you know, we don't cheer and we stay, you know, away from that type of behavior. But this was kind of a special moment. And as the fight was unfolding, it was hard not to get caught up in it a little bit and just kind of feeling for it. Fifth round, it was survival mode for Michael Bisping. And I got to say, man, I looked up, Simon Head was sitting next to me, and I looked up in that fifth and final round, and I'm like, because it looked like Michael was just about done, and I'm like, there's 3.5 minutes left. And I looked over to him, I'm like, this is going to be a long 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true, but it's amazing. It just showed his heart and how much he was willing to give up and push for it. And in some of those kicks that he took, it boiled down to it. And somebody even asked him, the presser was like, you know, like, how did you not drop after that? And he was like, you know, this was my everything. You know, like, he literally had been thinking about this fight for so long that he would not – he willed himself to, like, not fail through that, you know, not fall down and to get up. And that's about, at the point, all that really can keep you up. I mean, his chin was there, and I'm sure he was wobbled. But, you know, also Anderson, a couple of those times where he wobbled him, still had the – I don't know if it was just – the smarts to realize that Michael was still dangerous and he didn't really go in for the kill, where I think when he hobbled Mike, he probably could have, but he kind of held back a little bit. I don't know if that came from the fact that Silva's still maybe doubting himself a little bit, even though he does put on this big show of confidence and whatnot. There were moments in the fight that it just seemed to be a little bit hesitant,
yeah,
you know, more so than the other. And I think the old Anderson, you know, you saw glimpses of it where he did seem sort of a little tired, and when he had Michael down a little bit and he did move in, but there were points where just he didn't do it like he used to do it. And I think if he probably did, he might have put a lot more pressure and he might have been able to finish Michael. But I think he gave Michael the breaks and the time to actually recover. Even there was a couple times where Anderson actually sort of circled around after Mike was kind of wobbled, and it was actually just giving Michael a chance to recover.
Completely.
And I was really, really surprised by that. But no, it was such an incredible fight. You know, honestly, I was editing most of the night, so that is actually the only fight I got to watch tonight. But that's most nights.
If you wonder why you didn't hear more cold coffee on the episode tonight.
You know, well, I mean, but that honestly is what my life is pretty much like. I mean, it'd be one thing if I sat back there and just watched the fights and then wanted to spend the rest of the night and into the next morning of actually editing the videos, but I'd rather just crank them out so that the viewers could actually
Absolutely.
Watch it and we'd be done with it. I've seen enough of these. I've seen now hundreds of fights. You know, I'm just, you know, it's amazing. I love what I'm able to do. But also, you know, there was one fight that I really wanted to watch tonight, and that's the fight I made sure that I was done and ready. And regardless if I wasn't done, I was going to stop and watch. And it was Bisping versus Silva, and I got to watch it, and I was rewarded for it. It was an amazing fight. I had a great time watching that one.
It was. I guess the one question I'd have for you brought up the takedown attempt in the fifth round. That was the only takedown attempt of
the
entire fight.
The only one.
I kind of thought maybe Mike would come in with a little bit more of a takedown-oriented game plan. Not that Anderson's not dangerous on the ground.
Right.
I mean, Chael Sonnen can certainly attest to that. He's got some great jiu-jitsu and those long arms and limbs. I mean, they make for some dangerous weapons. But I kind of did think that Mike would at least go for takedowns a little bit more, if maybe to tire Anderson a little, or to just make him uncomfortable. Or maybe, were you surprised that it was that long until he went for
it? I did. But, you know, it's funny because the whole time when they were throwing, they were both feeling each other out. And I know Michael, his movement was good. He was backing out the right times. And I kept wondering, when's Anderson gonna try to throw that front snap kick to the face? And he never did. He kind of got him a couple times with a different little maneuver that who knows what the fuck it was called. But it was funny because I didn't think about it. I was enjoying how his jabbing and his boxing was working. That until the takedown attempt happened, it was like I didn't even think about takedowns. Why is Michael not doing? Because I was so much enjoying the striking game that was happening between the two of them that I wanted to just keep going because I thought I was going to see somebody get knocked out. But once I finally saw it, I was already found myself emotionally invested in having Bisping pull out the win that I wanted him to do it again. And I immediately thought it was the best thing he could do. Then I was like, why is he not taking him down? But up until that point, you know, I was completely happy and completely just loving the fact that both these guys wanted to finish. Silva seemed like he wanted to get the highlight finish. Bisping seemed like he wanted to finish it with a knockout to just capitalize on the win. And I think he got close a couple times.
Yep.
When he got Silva up against the cage and actually rocked him a couple times, then he felt the confidence. And I think Anderson on that turn also started feeling a little self-doubt. And I think that led into why he did some things later in the fight that weren't very typical Anderson. You know, there may be more typical Anderson as a post finally losing a couple times
right.
and losing the belt. But, you know, I think there's still some self-doubt, you know, and I think now fighters have realized that striking can be a way that they can win against Anderson Silva.
That's true. Well, huge night for the UFC. As Sandu was saying earlier, record gates in the UK, most watched live event in Fight Pass history. Should say briefly, I guess there was a server outage or a glitch in UFC Fight Pass for about 9 minutes. We spoke to some UFC officials earlier, kind of let us in on what happened there. They weren't really 100% sure exactly how everything happened, but the Fight Pass did go down for 9 minutes. Now, it affected desktop users only, so anybody that was watching on a phone or an iPad was okay, but if you were using a desktop, you did have some issue there. Did say that, yes, it was. They were having incredible traffic tonight, but it wasn't the spike in traffic. It was just the word that was used was an anomaly, and that was what the problem that that happened there. But you know, these things are going to happen. Streaming is the Fight Pass product is fantastic, and the technology is only going to keep getting better. I mean, there is a little bit of a delay. That's something they can't get around right now. It's just the way the technology works. It's the limits of it. But they will get there at some point. So, should say also, before we went to the festivities tonight for UFC Fight Night 84 at the O2, we actually got our day started a little bit earlier with Mark Goddard, who had a pretty big presence. Had it not been for Herb Dean being so involved in the third round of the main event, I think Mark Goddard might have been the big story of the night for his essentially just chastising Chito Vera earlier, who actually stole a piece of pizza earlier as well, for the way the a couple of fouls that he had in there holding the gloves. There was a point deducted, and it was just funny to see Mark Goddard kind of the way he dealt with the issue was very firm, and it was fun to watch. But we actually met him for lunch. He is a Nando's connoisseur. In much the same way that we are, except that he has got his Nando's game to a whole nother level. Every time I tweet a picture, he's like, bro, you got to order this and that and this and that. So we had to take him up on that. And we wanted to film some video there. We did get turned down and told, no, shut your damn cameras off, you Americans. Don't film in here. But we did get some nice audio at lunch with him. And I'll tell you one thing that was funny. I think it was kind of off before we actually sat down to start recording. I was asking Mark if he knew his assignments for the night, and he was saying that he was pretty sure he wasn't going to get the main event. You know, that he was pretty sure that Herb was going to get the main event, but he was actually kind of relieved about it, because if anything controversial happened and you got the British referee and the British fighter, that it would look bad. And he's like, yeah, I think it's better for everybody if I don't, just so that there's no. And then I was like, holy shit, had it been Mark Goddard at the end of that third round, who's like, I didn't say he's knocked out. He's going on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Man, how would that amplify the level of controversy? So Mark Goddard had the awareness of that, you know, hours and hours before to say, I'm glad. He's like, I won't know until I get there. That's when we get our assignments, but I'm pretty damn sure I'm not going to get the main event, and I'm actually very fine with that.
Yeah, and good on him. Talking about a big presence. I forgot how big he is.
He's a big man.
He's a big dude, and he eats some food, but I feel bad for our English friends here as well, because they're some of the ones that really improved our ordering as well.
True.
At Nando's, because as this video came out, it was all about how Mark was going to tell us silly Americans how to properly eat Nando's, and I have to give props to Sandu and Abby, who are here and look very, very tired and look like they're ready to leave as well, because they've definitely have upped our game. But I think it worked out good, because even though we weren't able to film, I think the interview that came from it was probably better than anything we would have got if we were able to shoot. So.
I agree. Well, it's creeping up on 6 a.m. here. Our European-based correspondents are grabbing their gear and heading towards the door. So we will wish them a fond farewell. In the meantime, you guys can listen to Mark Goddard and our conversation from lunch today before UFC Fight Night 84 went down. All right, well, here, getting some Nando's. This is our, I believe it's our fourth Nando's of the week.
I think it's our fourth.
We get Nando's as often as possible. But we are here with the master of Nando's, who is showing us how to get done. You put on a masterful display of ordering up there. You got a little bit of everything.
I've gone light today.
That was light?
Yeah, because obviously I'm going to be working a few hours. I've got some time to, first fight's going to be in about, for me, probably 4 hours, so I've got time to digest. But yeah, normally I'll have a bit more than that.
Well, we talk to fighters all the time, you know, about what their fight day experience is like. I don't know if I've ever talked to a referee about what their fight day is like, but it's pretty interesting because, I mean, you guys have one hell of an important job, obviously. The third man in the cage, you got big things going on there. You know, the one thing I always say about MMA officiating versus, like, every other sport, whether it be soccer, football, you know, baseball, basketball, whatever, is like every official makes mistakes here and there. You know what I mean? It just happens. We're humans. You know what I mean? But in those other sports, you make a mistake, maybe it means 5 yards in football, or maybe it means a penalty that whatever. It's easy to kind of just move on. If you make a mistake in MMA, like basically it's either A, a fighter safety issue, or B, you're stopping the fight. You know what I mean? Like you're costing a guy a win or a loss. So a lot of pressure on you guys, man. I think honestly it might be the toughest of any professional officiating job.
I agree. You know, it is what it is. You know, the consequences or the potential consequences are, you know, that they are real. You know, like you said, do I think about that when I'm officiating? No. Do I think about it before and after? Yeah. Because, you know, at this level, you're handling guys' entire careers. Do they get cut as the result of a loss? Do they get a title shot as the result of a loss? Do they pay their mortgage off with a bonus? Do they, you know? Well, these things don't enter your mind come fight time, but I'd be lying if I said it, you know, that goes with a package of the responsibility that you carry as a referee, man. It's no joke.
Yeah.
And that's why I said it's not for everyone. And like you said, we're human beings. And we are human beings. You know, nobody is more a harsh critic of myself than what I am. You know, I'm constantly scrutinizing myself. And when it comes to, have I looked back on things and went, oh, you know, maybe I could have done. Of course. And like you said, we're human beings. To this day, I can't recall a time I've ever made a mistake that's cost someone a fight. That's not happened to me, fortunately. Sure, I've made calls that people have gone, I don't agree with it. Why did you stop me? I don't know. But I'm talking a glaring error.
Where you know you just told, like, oh my God, I
screwed
up.
Like a guy gone this, that. You know, people may say different. That's that's the role of what we do, you know. As a referee, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And it happens, but, you know, people seem to think that, you know, that we're beyond, you know, referees are beyond. I'm one of the most vocal about being public and talking about the role and this, that, and the other. But, you know, what can I say? It's not for everyone.
Yeah. How'd you get into it?
My role as a referee was totally by accident. I'm now in my 13th year as a ref. It was a show, I think 2003, 2004. I turned up, I was supposed to fight on a show, but I was injured. And the promoter was a friend of mine, he had a gym. I turned up, one of the referees didn't. He said, will you jump in? I didn't have time to think about it. I did, and the rest is history.
That's amazing.
And it kind of just went from there. It was good because I remember at the time I got I had gratification from, because I shared, you know, on the circuit with these guys. They knew me from the scene, and I just took to it, you know. And it's kind of something I've said to people. It's not, you know, people, do you have to have been a former fighter to be a referee? No, because there are some fighters out there that you would not want refereeing with, right? And I'll leave you to decide who that is. But what I say to people is, like, the qualities you have to possess as a referee, you have to possess anyway, you know? You know, authority, presence of mind, you know, decision-making process, etc., etc. All of those things, you know, impartiality, integrity, all of the things that a referee can't, I don't believe you can be taught those things.
Right.
So you have to possess them anyway. And I discovered mine. You know, I was competing. I had some good wins, some losses. I had high times, low times. And for me, it was about acceptance. I wanted to be the best, but I wasn't good enough as a fighter. And then my journey into being an official, like we've said, it came around by accident. and I kind of fell into it, and then I thought, hang on a minute, I'm all right at this, you know, and it just went from there.
That's awesome. What's your fight day routine like? Do you have do you make sure you do certain things? I mean, how do you get yourself set? Because it sounds weird, but you got to be as on as the athletes are, right? You got to be mentally sharp, physically sharp. You got to be on.
You know, it's obvious. It's like, I say it's obvious or common sense, which is sometimes not so common. You know, it's a bit like now, I'll come out, I'll have something to eat with, obviously, like you guys or my official friends or anybody non-fighter related, obviously. Like, if you see me at a show, like, whenever I get into town, you'll never see me drink before a show. All the obvious things. The amount of times I roll into town and I see some officials, like, you know, with team shirts on and sitting with a drink before, silly things like that, and I'm thinking, you wonder why you don't exceed and you wonder why you don't excel. Again, it's like, if I have to tell you that it's wrong, it kind of underlines the point. So, without lecturing, I kind of just, on a fight day, typically this, I'll get up, have some breakfast, chill out. Normally there's a meeting, like a commission meeting, depends where we are in the world, who's running the show. Come out, get some food, I'll go back. That's why I always say, I get nervy again. What time are we going back? Because I always want to have like at least an hour in my room. That's my preparation time, where I go, like, I'll get showered, get dressed, have like a routine, and I'm kind of slowly, mentally emptying my mind.
Almost like meditation in a way.
Yeah, it's just like a ritual. When I was fighting, fighters are creatures of habit, and they do the same thing. I do the same thing when I officiate. I like to be alone and just give me a little bit of space to realize what I'm about to do.
Yeah.
And it just gets me prepared.
What's the feeling like a UFC main event, right? We talked about it on the way over here. You've been in some big ones. We were reminiscing over the Aldo Mendez 2 fight. What a fantastic fight that was. But what's the feeling like for you in a main event? Bruce Buffer's doing his thing. Bringing the thing to a different level. Everything's big. What's that moment like for you? Because I got to think, part of you probably wants to be excited about it a little bit and soak in the moment, like, holy shit, here we are, this is amazing. But again, as we talked about, you got to be on. So what's that moment like for you?
It is, you have a sense of occasion. If I'm standing in Las Vegas, Rio, Australia, Japan, but we could be anywhere in the world with any two fighters. Like we said before, I could be doing a championship fight. The rewards and the consequences of this, I say to would-be officials, okay, listen, man, I'm not going to lie to you. The pressures are very, very real. And do I get nervous? Absolutely. But that's what makes me perform. It's like before you fight, fighters will tell you there's a certain feeling. Without being condescending, it's like you try to describe it, but unless you're there, unless you feel it, it puts me where I need to be.
Yeah.
I get that heightened sense of awareness, and then the adrenaline starts to kick in. But that's kind of like, it's a mental flag for me to say, okay, I know what I'm about to do, and then I put myself in another place for however long the fight lasts. But yeah, the pressures are absolutely real.
That's awesome. You guys go do meetings with the fighters before the fights, right? You go talk to them?
Yeah, when we get our assignments.
Once you have your assignment, I'm sure everybody handles those meetings a little bit different. What's your key focus when you go talk to those guys?
You know what it is? It gives us a chance for the fighter to know, obviously, who's officiating. But it's kind of like, you don't want to take up too much of their time. And what it is, I always put the onus back on them for two reasons. One is, because if I ask you a question, I'm testing to see if you're listening to me. I saw referees go in, talk to fighters, and the fighters like, and the guys is talking.
Not paying attention.
Yeah, he's talking to me there. I could be saying anything. So I kind of keep it concise, and I say, look, guys, I could be dealing with a legend in the sport. I could be dealing with a first-time guy. But it's always the same. I give them the opportunity to ask me. Is there anything you'd like me to explain? Do you want my take on anything? If there's a rule you're not sure of, better to ask me now. Don't leave it till it's too late. And that kind of gets the conversation flowing. And then I give them kind of like
You got Libby side, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, you had macho peas too. Oh,
yeah, peas, mash, livers.
You know what? So let's just do this because I had hot. Let's do this. And then this is your mash.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's me.
That's the hell of me. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Cheers. There we go.
Look at that.
That's a light snack.
So how did this order, was this something that came upon in, like, after years of trying something out? Did you start with one thing and you found, like, the thighs was my thing? Or, you know, how did this
kind of
be?
I just kind of, like, grab it. It's kind of weird because I keep coming in and you go, I'm going to try something else. I'm going to have something different. And then you don't, you know? I kind of stick to the same thing.
I'm a creature of habit myself, so I completely understand.
How many times you go to your favorite restaurant and you have the same thing?
Same exact thing,
you
know? That's right.
Yep. You have the same thing. I can't change it. What's up, John?
Yeah, it's fine, because I'll edit it after the fact so it can have a little bit of a pause. But once it gets back...
Did you have the liver?
I'm going to try a little bit. I have never had it before.
Right. Here you go, bro.
Oh, there we go.
It's hot. Do you like spicy?
Yeah, spicy's fine.
That's the secret in here, chicken livers.
Wow, that's good.
So, yeah, like, my ritual's always the same, yeah. If I'm talking to Anderson Silva, or I'm talking to a first-time guy making his debut, I say the same thing. They don't deserve any less of my attention, or, you know, we don't get sidetracked. I ask them if they want my explanation. And once they finish with their questions, I then give them my little nuances when I say to them about, you know, I'll never ask you a question. If I want you to improve, I'll never stop you. I will always give you a minimum of 2 warnings. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And then always, again, it's like back to that ritual. I always close by saying the same thing. It's my closing statement that I say to every fighter, regardless. I've never changed it over the years. And it's along the lines of, look, if you're hurt at any point in the fight, you have to show me, do one thing for me and show me you're still in the fight. Keep your eyes on your opponent, keep fighting back. And as long as it's safe to do so, I'll give you every chance to stay in the fight. And I kind of keep it the same, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of just closes it off nicely. And I think it helps to build confidence in the guys, you know? And, that's pretty much what I do.
I'm not going to lie, this is a game changer right here.
Yeah, that is really, really good.
That's on the rotation now. This is now officially in the rotation. The peas, I tried the peas the other day. I thought they were okay. Maybe it's an English thing.
Hit and miss, huh?
Yeah. But honestly, that's the only thing I've ever had here I didn't dig was the peas. But the chicken livers, it's in the rotation now. I might even come here next time and not even get a half chicken. I might just be like, bro, give me some livers, give me some halloumi, and I might be good with this up.
Yeah, the livers was good. Something you touched on, I'd love to hear, because I know you said you sort of clear your mind before and after that you were able to think about the different things. When you're in the ring and you're watching the fight, is it a series of checklists in your head that runs through? Like, am I in the right position? I mean, I know that's normally probably just second nature, but is it, A, am I in the right spot for this? I mean, am I looking for the hands? What sort of dialogue is running in your head as the fight's going on?
I do, like you just said, am I talking to myself? Yeah. I talk to myself and I have like mental flags. It's like, you know, the famous thing about, you know, referees stopping the TKOs. If a guy taps, he taps. If he gets knocked out, he's knocked out. But TKOs, you know, I always say, what I look for is mental markers and mental flags, recognizing the beginning of the end.
When a guy is starting to look hurt, he's starting to get a little shaky, his knees are wobbly.
And then what happens is, when I referee in a normal, when you see me move around, everything is peripheral. I'm looking at everything, taking everything. Once something of significance happens, then my field of view does this and it closes in. And I get closer because I'm concentrating on something, you know, is about to unfold in front of me.
Sure.
Then if it amounts to nothing, I back out and my vision backs out.
Sure.
That's how I process it in my mind. And I'm always just running through that mental checklist. You know, it happens subconsciously.
Sure.
It's just there.
Well, I imagine definitely after doing it after so many years, it's something you don't even... It happens at lightning speed, you know. It's just one of those things that you rattle through. Is one of those things that you probably get on yourself, like, you ever go back and say, oh, I was kind of out of position in this thing, you know, how do I fix it? Is it always like a little checklist after the fact? Or?
Michael said, you know, there's no bigger critique of myself than myself. I look back on fights and think, you know, maybe I should have done this, or maybe I should have done that, or... You know, was I in position? And generally, like 99% of the time, I'm happy. It's when I think to myself, if I think I've got to go back and look at something, that's when I'm. Then I'm questioning it already, you know. And I just want to make sure that the need for a improvement as an official is continual.
Sure.
It doesn't stop, you know. You're as good as your last performance.
Sure. I know even within my field as videographers and a lot of the guys I see, we talk about things. We talk about maybe what worked and what didn't work. Does that process happen amongst referees as well? Do you guys get together with maybe the other guys here and say, hey, you know, what works for you guys? What do you guys want to do? And sort of pass on like a best practices to help maybe bring up some of the ones that are maybe not quite to the level of where you guys are, but hoping to get to that degree?
Always, you know. But sometimes after shows, we'll have a post-fight debrief. So the commission will call us together. They'll talk about things in the fight. You know, if something happened in the fight, a referee will explain it to us. We'll explain it in front of the group. You know, judges may talk about a particular decision, etc., etc. It just gives us all the chance to understand each other. And then I'll do that on a personal front as well, like Herb and John, you know. I respect all my peers, John and Herb, like, I look up to them and very humbling, you know, they say the same to me, which is, like, extremely humbling, you know?
Yeah.
And we kind of, like, you know, and Mark Ratner as well, somebody who I hold in extremely high regard, you know, those are the opinions that matter, you know? And like I say, the need for review and improvement is continual. You know, it's the same for fighters, it's the same for officials.
Sure. Well, speaking of that, something I thought was really incredible because I'd never seen this happen before, and you probably know because it was about you. There was a point where we were at a Nevada commission, and Bob Bennett and those guys were talking about the possibility of opening up other positions for referees that came into town to be able to work events. And your name was the one, I think it was International Fight Week, they said, he's coming into town. We'd love to be able to have this gentleman do it. And you had guys that I was, you know, Bob Bennett, the guys that are running the show, Ratner, were saying this is an utmost example of what a referee should be. We would love to be able to have the flexibility and freedom to use this guy while he's in town. How does that feel to know that these guys are going to bat pretty much and have the utmost respect for what you do, saying that you're an example of what a ref should be?
It was extremely humbling, you know. Emotionally too, you know, but it was kind of like a lifetime's work. Okay, I've been an official for my 13th year, but I've devoted a significant portion of my life to martial arts and mixed martial arts in general.
Yep.
And it's all, you know, it was extremely satisfying. I'm still, to this day, I'm the only British referee ever licensed in Nevada, including boxing.
Wow.
They've had judges before, but never a referee. And that was some, you know, in Las Vegas.
That's awesome.
Las Vegas is the fight capital of the world, and it's you know, wherever we go with the UFC, you know, it's, I keep saying to would-be officials, it's a place that you graduate to, not from. It's not somewhere that you can make mistakes, you know. And it's, yeah, it was certainly a personal highlight for me to have the huge honor and privilege of being licensed in Nevada.
That's awesome, man. It's great to see you out there. Well, I think people are starting to really recognize you, where you stand, as one of the best officials in the world. And I think that's I mean, A, that says a lot about your commitment, your dedication, your professionalism, but I really do feel like just, you know, seeing comments on Twitter, or reading message boards, or, you know, just being in touch with the community the way we are, man, I really do feel like people are starting to mention you in that same breath with Big John, with Herb Dean, and I think that's just a testament to what you've done so far, man.
That means the world to me, you know? You know, Big John is the forefather of what we do. You know, he's the founding father of MMA officiating. Herb, again, world class, you know, been there for so long, and I'm happy just to, you know, I came through with a, to me, you know, it's fantastic when you get recognition, and I'm not going to lie, because people go, oh, referees are that, bullshit, utter bullshit. Recognition, it is a not, you know, when it's earned, people go, oh, I don't like it yet. Yeah, you do.
Of course.
Don't lie.
Of course.
You know, you do, and it's especially in the world of an official, because, you know, like you've seen them, people are very quick to criticise if we do something that's perceived as wrong. So sometimes when we get a bit of love and a bit of support, it's nice, you know. It's nice, but yeah, I take it with it's an honour for me to, you know, be mentioned in the same category as Herb and John. And, you know, it's not about being the best, but when John got the award for Fighters Only, I mean, even, I'm just little old me from Britain. John's been there from day one. Herb's been referee since 19, whatever it was,
yeah.
UFC, ridiculous number. I started with UFC 89. I'm coming into my 9th year. I'm very privileged. I'm very thankful, and I just want to make a difference, man. You know, mixed martial arts, it doesn't just work for my mind, it's in my heart, you know, and it's my passion. It's outside of my children, it's the most fulfilling thing in my life. Sorry, outside of my wife and my children. Shit, could you edit that? I meant to say outside of my family. Sorry, love. Outside of my family, it's the most fulfilling thing in my life, you know, without question.
That's awesome. All right, let's enjoy some chicken, man. Let's do it. You changed my order. You changed my game from now on. I used to be a half chicken extra hot with peri chips. That was it. Livers are now going into the game. That's going to happen. I forgot to order my halloumi cheese, but I had it yesterday. The halloumi cheese is awesome. That's going in the rotation. The sweet potato mash is on point. I don't know if I give up my french fries. I'm a fat kid at heart, but like the french fries or the chips, as we do. But you are a man among men. You're a legend in the Nando's game, no doubt about it. and good luck to you tonight. Obviously, we'll be watching from cage side. But hey, man, you're in there performing just like everybody else, dude. So good luck to you tonight, and hope you do good work.
Appreciate you guys.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Mark Goddard. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. A little something special we did today earlier this afternoon. Cold Coffee, London Experience. We're wrapping it up at 6 o'clock in the morning. We got to head out. We got to pack up. We got to fly home. But your week in London, what did you think?
It was good. It was good. It was cold. We did a hell of a lot of walking, which is really good for us, I suppose. You know, it's always tough. You know, these trips, as much as we would like them to be sightseeing events and whatnots, they never are. But we did. I think we did some good work, and you know, luckily we got to see a little bit of the sights. You know, covering some of the UFC stuff, so that's always good. But you know, I look forward to coming back here sometime and actually getting to see some more of the sights. You know, luckily I've seen them before, so I've done the whole Parliament, the Westminster Abbey, and the Eye, and all the other good stuff. But what an amazing city! It's very, very unique, and it's so full of people from all walks of life and different cultures. And it's one of those cities that, if you've never been, it should be a destination, just like Las Vegas, which we're lucky and blessed enough to live in Las Vegas. London is another one of those places that, if you can get used to the tube and all the crazy traffic and look in the wrong direction for traffic and whatnot.
I did almost get killed the first time I did. I stepped out in traffic looking the wrong way and almost got killed the first time I was in England.
I'm telling you, if it isn't for when you walk up to a street and it says look left or look right, I swear I would have done the same thing.
It's nuts. Well, it has been a fun week. Obviously, I had my wife and kid here this week, so that kind of made it a unique week for me. I haven't seen them in a while because this was a long day, but it was a lot of fun. And we'll be right back at it again next week. We'll be back home in Las Vegas, UFC 196, a big event there. Not quite the event that everybody was hoping for at first, but still a fun event either way. That'll be a lot of fun. So looking forward to that. Haven't thrown it out there, but we'll say, as we always do, you can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher. Still don't know anything about Stitcher, but it's there. Yeah. TheMMARoadshow.com. Instagram at the MMA Roadshow.
Maybe some new areas. I talked to Anik. He got my brain going on some things. So we'll stretch out a little bit more and stuff. We'll see.
We've been talking about some stuff. We've been looking at options. We're looking options. We're looking at options. So in the meantime, just help us out. You know, go rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Help us help us show the world that this is a fantastic waste of your time to listen to. And,
no, but it is. Drink your frosty beverages. Who is it? The Frosty Beverage Cartel?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the hashtags.
That's what's up. So, we're just saying all that. It's late. It's early. We got to leave.
Yeah.
So, let me just say, thanks for listening.
Chicken thighs. Chicken thighs.
Oh, yeah.
Four thighs, medium. Well done. With peas and sweet potato mash. Sweet potato mash and peas. Yeah. What did you say? No. Chicken livers hot. With a chicken livers hot. Yeah. With a bread roll. Olive, salumi, chicken thigh, hot, please.
Yes, and then some sides.
No, bread roll. Just a soft drink, please. Yes, please. So, halloumi, chicken thighs, meat sauce, chicken thighs.
Well done, chicken thighs.
Yes, please.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
We'll just keep going on that.
I'll do a half chicken.
Half chicken.
Extra hot. With a side of peri peri fries. With fries. Just that, just one side.
One side, peri peri fries.
Yeah. And then also, I want to do the livers and roll hot. Hot. Yeah. And a soft drink.
No side for me, yeah?
Yeah.
Soft drink for you. Okay. Yeah.
Whole chicken.
Yes.
Hot.
Yes.
Side of peri chips.
One peri peri.
Yep. And one peronaise sauce.
Hi, can I have 10?
Soft drink for you.
Just a water glass. Water.
10 wings extra hot, please.
Sorry?
10 wings.
10 wings
extra hot.
Yes.
Chicken liver.
Yes.
Chicken livers.
No sides for the wings.
Small fries.
Yes.
I love it. Fries. You're a legend. This trip.
And a chicken livers, please.
I did it the first day.
Chicken livers. I'd like a chicken liver.
Hot.
You got my wings that are extra hot, right?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes.
Something to drink for you.
I just like a glass of water, please.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, sorry, peronaise.
Okay.
You done?
Yeah.
Can I get a glass, please? I just want to grab a drink. Thanks. Thank you.
Nice glasses.
Yeah.
For you, same order.
Can I get a half butterfly chicken.
Butterfly chicken. Then how spicy?
Hot, please.
Okay, and?
With fries and coleslaw.
Chips, yes.
Chips and coleslaw, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
And can I get a peronaise with that as well, please?
Something to drink?
Can I get a glass as well, please, for the soft drink? Yeah.
Soft drink? Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next week,
can I get
same, yeah?
Yes. Can I get a butterfly chicken medium?
With peri chips and rice and two peronaise dips. And sweet potato mash. And let me just go get my Nando's card. One second, I'll go get my Nando's card.